beautiful people. This is the Michael Slate Show, and I am your guest host, Sansara Taylor. On today's show, we'll be sharing segments from the RNL Revolution Nothing Less show, which airs on YouTube. But before we get into that, I have incredible, exciting, tremendous news. Bob Avakian, the revolutionary leader, the author and architect of a whole new framework for human emancipation, what we call the New Communism, is out now on social media. At Bob Avakian Official on all the platforms, he's bringing his voice and world-class leadership to the public square, telling people the truth they need to hear and fighting for revolution. And he is straight up at this historic time, putting himself forward because he is a leader who can lead us through this crazy morass and intensifying nightmare and crisis of this system to wrench out a real revolution, true emancipation for all of humanity. So don't miss this. If you're on TikTok, Instagram, X, formerly known as Twitter, all the social media platforms, look for at Bob Avakian Official, and you can find him bringing you the truth, hard-hitting, not watered down, the truth you need regularly. Don't miss it. The other thing I want to highlight for you is that the full RNL Revolution Nothing Less show is available at youtube.com/therevcoms. And on that channel, you can find the full, complete, historic 3-part series interview that I did with Bob Avakian together with my co-host there, Andy Z. We interviewed Bob Avakian extensively. He spoke about his life. He opened up his heart, his history, his personal development, but also his political development. He explored the lessons and formative experience that he draws from working closely with the Black Panther Party in their most revolutionary days. He gets into how he went from being a patriotic American, thankful that he was born in what he believed was this greatest of all countries, to somebody who has become an ardent critic of this country and everything it stands for and everything it does in the world down to today, and the most fiercest advocate for an actual revolution and fighter for this revolution to bring about a world without everything America stands for and true emancipation for all of humanity. He gets into the strategy for this revolution. He gets into the future society, what it needs to look like. He gets into all the things that are holding people back, from those who are catching the hardest hell at the bottom of this society to the students on the campuses with the woke lunacy that's taking hold, but also reaching people's highest aspirations for a radically different world. He does all of this and more, gets into the poetic spirit, gets into all of this, but he is hardcore for a real revolution. And there is nothing like this journey, like these interviews. So I recommend you go to youtube.com/therevcoms. You can also find them at the website revcom.us, where you will find hundreds of articles, audio, other clips about this revolution and from this revolutionary leader, Bob Avakian. There are very few people in the public square or not in the public square who would say that these are normal times, or times even close to normal, whatever that has meant. But very few realize that this is one of those rare times when revolution is more possible. And for the sake of humanity and the planet, we need to seize this moment so the resources I just gave you are indispensable in the situation we are in. So with that, let's begin with the opening commentary from the Revolution Nothing Less show.
My name is Annie Day, and this show is about an actual revolution to bring a fundamentally different system into being. To learn why we need this revolution and how this revolution is more possible in this time. To learn about the leadership we have for this revolution in Bob Avakian, we're bringing you a speech that was given by the co-host of this show, Sansara Taylor. She gave it last February at UCLA. The speech was titled, "Actually, revolution is possible. And if we don't make this revolution soon, humanity is thoroughly f***ed." The speech will be followed by a Q&A with questions that were raised in the audience from students and others.
I want to introduce Sansara Taylor. You might remember her from last year at UCLA, where she spoke to 125 people on the topic of woke lunacy versus real revolution. Sansara is a fighter for real revolution based on the new communism developed by Bob Avakian. She co-hosts the RNL Revolution Nothing Less show on YouTube, and she co-founded Rise Up for Abortion Rights, which led tens of thousands into the streets against the overturning of Roe versus Wade. So give Sansara Taylor a warm welcome.
Good to see you all here tonight. You especially. Actually, revolution is possible. And if this revolution is not made soon, humanity is thoroughly f***ed. Now, my name is Sansara Taylor, and my mission tonight is to recruit you, especially young people in this room, but everybody, to dedicate this year, this pivotal year, and really your life, to learning about, fighting for, and getting organized for an actual revolution, which is the only way to win a future for humanity that is worthy of humanity. If that sounds like a big ask, it is. If it sounds like too much to ask, then you really don't understand what is happening right now. The horrors that are hurtling towards humanity, on the one hand, or the tremendous opportunity that is before us to wrench something emancipating and liberating out of this very pivotal moment that we are in. History is marked by extended periods where seemingly little changes. Generations go by one after the other. Then there are times when events accelerate, when change happens at a pace in months and even weeks that usually happens over the course of decades. These are turning points that radically alter world history. The old order unravels and is shredded apart. And if revolutionaries have been working to recognize and seize on the opportunity, then the chance emerges, seemingly out of nowhere, to wrench something radically emancipating out of these turning points. This is what happened with the Russian Revolution, the first socialist successful revolution. This is what happened with the Chinese Revolution, which remained on the socialist path until the mid-70s. And this is what could happen in this country, in this time in which we are living, entering into this pivotal year. Young people today are coming of age. You students are coming of age in a time that is a turning point, when humanity's future hangs in the balance. And what you do or fail to do can make all the difference between whether humanity is consumed by even greater nightmare and catastrophe than we have lived through thus far, on the one side, or whether we wrench out through our struggle, out of this turning point, a radical, emancipating new society and world where we can finally go to work at long last to eradicate poverty and hunger across this globe, to break the thousands of years of traditions chains that have bound and enslaved and brutalized women for millennia, and all oppression based on gender and sexual orientation. Whether we can have the shot of ending all oppression based on race and nationality and put an end to exploitation in every form all over the world, all while freeing the spirit from the cell. In my talk today, I'm going to address two big questions. First, do we really need something as extreme as an actual revolution? The shattering of the old state and the complete overturning of the whole economic system, the whole political system, the whole way that people relate to each other and to the planet. Or can this system be reformed? Question two will be, is this revolution really possible? And in the course of addressing this second question, I am going to speak to not only why this revolution is possible, but why it is more possible now than it has been in generations. And in the course of this, I will talk about why we RevComs make such a big deal about the leadership of Bob Avakian and the new communism that he has forged. After this, I'll speak right down on the ground about why it is so important that you get into this revolution now. Why this is the most meaningful thing you can do with your life. I will talk about what you as students,
and others can do right now to radically change the way that everybody is looking at everything in this society. And I'll talk about what you can do even as you are learning about this revolution and sorting out what you think of it and where you fit into it going forward. And if this speaks to you, if this stirs something in you, I want to ask you to stick around when this program is over after the Q&A. Come down to the front of the room. We are going to have an organizing meeting right here tonight because I want to talk with you about this. And I want you to have a chance to meet others who are making that same decision. So stick around. And in getting into this, I'm going to be quoting extensively from and pointing to some important works from Bob Avakian, BA, and from the RevComs. I'm going to do this because these pieces break down important and complex concepts without watering them down. And I want to do this because I want to point you to these resources that you need to be returning to. So with that, let's get into it. Question one, is it really true that if revolution is not made, humanity is thoroughly f***ed? Or another way to put this is, can this system be reformed or must it be overthrown? Or, as quite a few students on this campus have put it to us, do you mean a physical revolution? With the obvious undertone that violence of any kind is really bad. So let's start with this undeniable reality. Massive violence is already happening on an industrial scale. It is the system of capitalism imperialism that is the overwhelming perpetrator of unjust violence, horrific violence, every day in this world. Let's start by looking at Gaza. Even before Israel began its war against the entire civilian population of Gaza, the Israeli defense minister openly stated their genocidal intentions. He promised a complete siege. A complete siege. No food, no water, no fuel for any of the 2.3 million human beings imprisoned in Gaza. He said, I quote, "We are dealing with human animals, and we will act accordingly." This is straight up Nazi talk. First, the Israelis forced a million people out of the north of Gaza. Then, as they bombed people, as they fled in so-called safe corridors, then they invaded hospitals. Then they desecrated cemeteries. They dropped 2,000-pound bombs on overcrowded refugee camps where people were huddled and tensed. And now, with 1.3 million people crowded into the southern city of Rafah, a city that was overcrowded when it held just 200,000 people not long ago. With all these people crowded in, Israel is saying they have to flee because they are preparing a ground invasion. But where are these people supposed to go? What is there to return to besides the rubble of what once was their homes, their hospitals, their universities, their bakeries? Rubble. Reduced to rubble. That's what they can return to. Rubble mixed with the broken bodies and blood of tens of thousands of children and innocent women and men. The violence is already happening. This is genocide. It is the intentional killing of a whole people. And it is happening with the full backing of genocide Joe Biden and the entire U.S. ruling class. It is happening in your name. As Bob Avakian has pointed out, this is not because of the Jewish lobby. This is not because of some false and anti-Semitic notion that Jews run the world. This is happening because of the system of capitalism imperialism and the nature of this system. It is a system based on ruthless exploitation of people all over the world and of gangster competition between nations over who will dominate resources and key regions. The U.S. is backing Israel because Israel is a key outpost of U.S. imperialism in the strategic region of the Middle East. And if the U.S. doesn't maintain domination in that region, it is afraid of losing influence to rival imperialists like China or Russia, or even to regional powers like Iran. So it has to back this terror that Israel is raining down. Now, maybe you have noticed, like I have, that one of the biggest crazes right now in podcasts and TV is true crime. Maybe some of you are into this. I know the woman who cuts my hair is really into it. She watches it nonstop until it keeps her up at night because she's so traumatized and she can't stop herself from going back for more. Who did it? How did they pull it off? How did the neighbor figure it out? True crime. Well, I want to say, if you want to know true crime, and I'm not talking about a few twisted individuals perverted enough to want to go out and kill one or two or even a dozen people. I'm talking about a class of people, a ruling class, many of whom are very well-mannered, many of whom have degrees from elite institutions like this one, many of whom are respected by society, but who together reign over a system of global exploitation that destroys the lives of millions of children and all kinds of people all over this globe and has caused the needless murders of millions and millions of people in this world just in the time that people in this room have been alive and walking this earth. You want to talk about true crime? I challenge you to go to revcom.us and read the American Crime series. Learn about what this country and what this system has done. And you will see how the U.S. has engaged in wars, in coups d'etats, in invasions, assassinations, death squads, and torture throughout its history. In Afghanistan, Iraq, Mexico, the Philippines, Yemen, Somalia, Congo, Haiti, Dominican Republic, Grenada, Guatemala, Panama, Indonesia, Laos, Vietnam, Korea, Honduras, Nicaragua, Iran, Hiroshima, Nagasaki, and the list goes on and on. In his book, Basics, from Bob Avakian, BA, put it this way. He says, imperialism means huge monopolies and financial institutions controlling the economies and political systems and the lives of people, not just in one country, but all over the world. Imperialism means parasitic exploiters who oppress hundreds of millions of people and who condemn them to untold misery. Parasitic financiers who can cause millions to starve just by pressing a computer key and thereby shifting vast amounts of wealth from one place to another. And imperialism means war. War to put down the resistance and rebellion of the oppressed, and war between rival imperialist states. It means the leaders of these states can condemn humanity to unbelievable devastation, perhaps total annihilation, with the push of a button. End quote. And today, through its backing of Israel, through its proxy war in Ukraine against Russia, and through its rivalry and brinksmanship with China, the U.S. is pushing humanity closer every day to all-out open inter-imperialist wars between imperialist powers, all of whom are nuked up enough to destroy human civilization as we know it on this planet today several times over, and this includes the U.S. and its arsenal. We need a revolution. Or look at the environment. Now, everybody knows, who is not in denial or has not been denied access to basic understanding, that we are careening towards an uninhabitable planet. Already humanity faces deadly hot spells, rising sea levels, longer droughts, and fiercer storms. Up to 1 million species are threatened with extinction, some within decades. This, too, is rooted in the system of capitalism and imperialism. This system forces big-time capitalists and governments of the major world powers to compete with each other for markets, for cheap labor, for raw material, including fossil fuels, and for control of strategic parts of the world. If they don't do this cheaply enough and ruthlessly enough to beat out their competitors, they risk going under. It's dog eat dog, expand or die. This system forces them to treat concern for the environment and long-term planning as externalities to profit and to their competitive advantage. And this leads to economic and political conflicts repeatedly. It repeatedly leads to wars, which themselves have a devastating effect on the environment. And here's a dirty little secret. The U.S. military is the single largest institutional consumer of oil in the world. You cannot solve this under this system. We need a revolution. And there is more. White supremacy, police terror, mass incarceration are built into this system. Patriarchy and oppression based on gender and sexual orientation is built into this system. Demonization and terror and deportation against immigrants is built into this system. And just because all this violence and vicious oppression may not be happening to you, doesn't mean it's not happening. Unless and until this system is overthrown and replaced by a radically different system, a socialist system, all these horrors will continue and get worse if humanity has a future at all. So yes, we need a revolution. And yes, if we do not make this revolution soon, then humanity is thoroughly f***ed. Now, revolution means millions and millions of people rising up. I'm not talking about an act of a handful. Revolution is millions and millions of people rising up, demanding the abolishment and dismantling of the current system, the abolition of its constitution and laws and government, and the replacement of all this with a radically new system, this socialist system as laid out in this constitution written by Bob Avakian. Now, you might ask yourself, who are these millions? You don't have millions. Who are these millions who are going to make this revolution? I'll tell you who they are. They are the people right now who are gangbanging in the ghettos and barrios of this country. They're the people in the hollers of Appalachia who are strung out on opioids. They're the people like the trans youth who are terrorized and victimized. They are the women who are red hot with fury at being forced to have children against their will and denied the right to abortion. And they are people just like you in this room, just like some of your classmates. They are people who right now are not thinking about this revolution, but that can change. And if you think that people can't change in the way I'm describing, then there is a mountain of evidence throughout history that proves otherwise. That proves that if there is a force that fights to awaken people's highest aspirations, aspirations that are suppressed by the workings of this system but that are there, if there is a force that works to struggle with people, to break with all the backwards ways of thinking that this system drums into them, if there is a force that does this and it comes together at these turning point times, then yes, people can change and they can change overnight. And this is exactly the kind of time that we are in. So I want to talk for a minute before going to the second question about what this revolution makes possible. Because here's a very heavy thing. We RevComs have been out at this campus, UCLA, for several weeks now. We've talked to hundreds of students. We've heard your questions. We've heard your objections. We've gotten into this, that, and the other. But one thing I have never heard come up from a single student I've spoken to or heard about from some of the other conversations is any young person putting forward an alternate vision of a positive future. I mean, think about that. There is no hope among the younger generation. It's not their fault, but this has to change. So we need to talk about what revolution makes possible, how we could be living. And this is why it's important for every person here to get this broadsheet. We need and we demand a whole new way to live, a fundamentally different system, to read it, to get it out to everybody you know. Because spreading the word about how we could be living differently, lifting our sights, has a lot to do with making a better future possible. So the future that is possible with revolution is characterized in this piece, and it's broken down much more fully in this Constitution. And here I want to quote from Bob Avakian himself, who describes what this new society and what this constitution makes possible. He says, "It is a fact that nowhere else in any actual or proposed founding or guiding document of any government is there anything like not only the protection, but the provision for dissent and intellectual and cultural ferment that is embodied in this Constitution." Think about that. While this has as its solid core a grounding in the socialist transformation of the economy with the goal of abolishing all exploitation and the corresponding transformation of the social relations, that is the relations between people, how we treat each other, and all the political institutions to uproot all oppression. That's what's embodied in this. And B.A. goes on to quote from the Constitution itself, as he speaks to how, in addition to everything I just mentioned, the intellectual ferment, the cultural ferment, the uprooting exploitation and oppression, this new society as a whole, and the education system in particular, will promote an approach that, quote, enables people to pursue the truth wherever it leads, with a spirit of critical thinking and scientific curiosity. And in this way, to continually learn about the world and be better able to contribute to changing it in accordance with the fundamental interests of humanity. Compare that to the way you are constantly lied to and bombarded with propaganda under this system, denied the real truth about what this country does around the world and how it works. Compare this to the way that when people lift up their heads under this society and protest and stand up, they're repressed and demonized and slandered. It's a whole different orientation. And then B.A. goes on and concludes this quote by saying, "All this will unchain and unleash a tremendous productive and social force of human beings, enabled and inspired to work and struggle together to meet fundamental needs of the people, transforming society in a fundamental way and supporting and aiding the revolutionary struggle throughout the world, aiming for the final goal of a communist world, free from all exploitation and oppression, while at the same time addressing the truly existential environmental and ecological crisis in a meaningful and comprehensive way, which is impossible under the system of capitalism imperialism." This constitution from Bob Avakian is a mind-blowing document, and it's grounded in reality. It's what we could really do, how we could be living if we got this system off the backs of humanity. This is the new communism. It recognizes and fights for and builds on the tremendous achievements of the first revolutions of the 20th century, but it also scientifically and thoroughly sums up where they went wrong, even seriously wrong, and comes out with a radically new vision. So day one after the revolution, there will be no more police gunning down and terrorizing black youth and others. That will be over. Day one after the revolution, women's fundamental right to abortion will be guaranteed. Full stop. Day one, we will begin to rapidly reorient and reconfigure the economy and production to go to work, to overcome, to meet people's needs, yes, but to do it in a way that's socially sustainable and overcome as much as possible the damage to the environment. There is so much, all of this and so much more that is possible once we get this system and its death grip, capitalism, imperialism, off the backs of humanity. Which brings me to question two, the second question I'm going to address. But is this really possible? Yes, a revolution is possible. And not in some far-off time or place. This is possible right here and right now in this time in which we are currently living. To bring alive how this is so, I want to quote extensively here, read an excerpt from a recent social media message that Bob Avakian posted, at Bob Avakian Official. Definitely follow him. He says, "In this country right now, there is a deepening crisis and bitter, profound divisions among the powers that be. A big part of the population and a major section of the ruling class, represented by the Republican Party, has become fascist, based on an open and aggressive white supremacy, male supremacy, and other oppressive relations, refusing to accept the outcome of elections it does not win, determined to gut and to pervert the rule of law, trample people's rights, and adopt what amounts to an undisguised capitalist dictatorship, ready to use violence not only against the masses of people, but also against its rivals within the ruling class. This fascist section of the ruling class no longer believes in and has more or less openly abandoned what have been the cohering norms, that is, the regulating set of beliefs and processes of this system. This is a big change. Meanwhile, the other section of this ruling class, represented by the Democratic Party, is trying to maintain the democratic form through which this system exercises political power, an actual dictatorship over the masses of people in this country, in order to maintain its system of brutal exploitation and murderous oppression, backed up by massive slaughter, which this ruling class continues to carry out all over the world. So here Bob Avakian is describing a division among the rulers at the top. And then he continues. The presidential election this year, 2024, will be a sharp focus of the fight between these ruling class parties, Democrats and Republicans, a fight that is very likely to break all out of the bounds of the normal way they exercise power over the people and keep their whole system going. And then Bob Avakian continues and it gets heavier. He says, this could lead to armed clashes between opposing sections of the ruling class, which could even develop into large-scale military confrontation, a new kind of civil war. In any case, this kind of profound crisis within the ruling system is bound to affect every part of society and every major institution of this system, including its armed forces, with the real potential for major splits in these institutions. The fascists in this country as a whole are not as great in numbers as those who are opposed to the fascism. But these fascists are driven by an irrational fanaticism. And they also have a lot of initiative because a major section of the ruling class is made up of fascists now. They dominate very important institutions, including the Supreme Court, and they are also willing to act outside the normal channels of this system and mobilize violent fanatics to achieve their goals. Think of January 6th, and there are so many other examples that could be given. At the same time, among the majority of people who are opposed to this fascism, too many are still going along, clinging to the hope that somehow things will work out as they always have, while many are also weighed down by the belief that nothing can be done to change the very negative direction of things. The Democratic Party is deathly afraid of mobilizing masses of people in the way that would be necessary to decisively defeat the fascists, because the Democrats fear that this could lead to things getting all out of control, threatening their whole system. This is where the forces for revolution come in, bringing out sharply the reality of what is happening and why, and bringing alive the positive vision and the positive solution to all of this, a real revolution, acting urgently and decisively to change the whole alignment, the whole polarization in society, rapidly repolarizing things in a way that is increasingly favorable for revolution, and winning masses of people from every part of society to break with this whole system and come over to the side of the revolution. So here BA is talking about what we who are fighting for this revolution and you who are just learning about and joining this revolution need to get busy doing now, and how this can then play out as the crisis intensifies. He goes on, the forces for revolution must come to the fore in the fight against the fascists, and do so not with the aim of preserving or restoring the democratic form of this murderously oppressive system of capitalism and imperialism, but with the strategic goal of bringing this system down and bringing something much better into being. As the fight is carried forward to defeat the forces seeking to preserve or restore the blood-soaked system in one form or another, it would become possible to win over even greater numbers from different parts of society to join this revolution, including many who had been part of the armed forces themselves and other key institutions of this system. An important factor to consider in all this is the contradiction that among the ranks of the system's armed forces are large numbers of people who have been drawn from among Black people, Latinos, women, and other oppressed people. While their oppression is built into the very system of capitalism imperialism that they are supposed to fight for. This is a contradiction that is an important part of the basis to win over to the revolution many who start out as part of this system's armed forces, as things develop and as attempts to crush the revolution are defeated, leading to a dynamic that is increasingly favorable to the revolution. All this will make for an extremely complicated situation, but one which holds not just the possibility of things becoming even more terrible than normal life under this system, but also the potential to wrench something profoundly positive out of all of this, an actual emancipating revolution. If the revolutionaries and rapidly growing numbers of people organized into the ranks of the revolution firmly grasp this possibility and act boldly, with scientifically grounded determination to seize this rare situation. So the race, that's the end of the excerpt. So the race is on now to bring forward the forces necessary to effect all of this. We are talking about a crisis that is intensifying and likely to go through major leaps through the course of this year in the 2024 election. How we work on all this is broken down in a pamphlet called Building Up the Basis to Go for the Whole Thing with a Real Chance to Win, a Strategic Orientation and Practical Approach. This lays out the strategic orientation and the practical approach. And it brings alive the importance, as I said earlier, of fighting to lift people's sights to what kind of future is really possible if we make a revolution. It means spreading this revolution. This pamphlet breaks down the importance of standing up and fighting the power and leading others to stand up against and defend people against the vicious and unjust and illegitimate attacks on their rights and their very lives, down at the border, at the hands of police and fascist thugs, at school boards and libraries, in the streets around Gaza, and in many other ways. This brings alive the need to fight to transform the thinking of people, to change how millions are thinking right now, to much more thinking about revolution and emancipation. We all know that people are caught up in bullshit, let's be honest. People are caught up in all kinds of wrong thinking, from woke lunacy and cancel culture that dominates still too much on the campuses, to attempts to elect so-called socialists among the so-called left to be part of this imperialist monstrosity of a system, to people at the bottom of society killing and shooting each other in the ghettos and barrios, to just the plain old me obsession with self that is so much part of American parasitic culture. All this is wrong, it is poison, and we have to go out and fight to challenge it. We have to struggle to change what people are thinking about, not go with the grain. And this is possible, especially in this period when the routine of people's daily lives will be shattered and disrupted, when they're going to be forced to ask big questions, when we can make progress in changing people's thinking rapidly. And this pamphlet and strategic approach brings alive the need to be getting deeply into and spreading everywhere the leadership of Bob Avakian. Bob Avakian became a revolutionary in the 1960s. He worked alongside the Black Panther Party in its most revolutionary days. He fought against the Vietnam War. He did many other things at that time. But since then, unlike so many others of that generation and since, he did not give up on revolution. The problems he was fighting against and others were fighting against then did not get better. They've gotten worse. So he didn't give up on revolution. But not only that, he went to work trying to solve the most vexing problems that face people and trying to make a revolution. How would you defeat this system? How would you unite all the diverse and different kinds of people in a country like this? What would you put in the place of this system after you overthrew it? What do you learn from the past revolutions and what do you need to do differently? Through this, he developed a strategy. He developed a concrete vision of the new society. He developed a thoroughly scientific method and approach to understanding and changing the world that everybody needs to take up in order to more fully contribute to this. Well, not everybody has to take it up, but can help people take it up. People can contribute to this wherever they're coming from, but it will enable us to synthesize all those contributions and learn from them. Bob Avakian has authored in this totality a new communism, a whole new framework for human emancipation. And this is a really big deal. It's a great strength on the side of the people. But I know this is controversial. And maybe you've heard, I've definitely heard, if you haven't yet, you will, the cynics and the haters who get out there and they trot out this tired old slander that Bob Avakian and the RevComs, they're a cult. Because we make a big deal about Bob Avakian. Well, let's get real. Bob Avakian is deeply loved by some, and he is reviled and slandered and hated on by others for the exact same reason. Because he is hardcore for a real revolution, the most radical revolution in the history of humanity. And this stands in stark contrast to all the half measures, the dead ends, and the bullshit that is so pervasive in today's so-called social movements. So yes, he's controversial. Revolution, changing the world, is controversial. Now, if somebody wants to come out and argue that revolution is not necessary, they should come out and argue it. If somebody wants to put forward that a way that they think is better than what Bob Avakian has come up with for how we can make this revolution or what the new society should look like, they should lay that out. And we can lay their facts and their analysis up against the work that Bob Avakian has done. And everybody could learn from that. Let's see what measures up, what we can learn from each other. But those who cry cult are not doing this. They're just trying to play a get-out-of-thought-free card to cover over the fact that they have no real answers, and really they're just looking for a place for themselves within this monstrous system, regardless of the cost to humanity. But for everyone who does care, for those of you who do care, and are not afraid of thinking, not afraid of getting out of your comfort zone on things that really matter, go deeply into the interviews that Bob Avakian did on the Revolution Nothing Less show. You can watch them at youtube.com/therevcoms. In these interviews, Bob Avakian opens up his heart and his life, his scientific method and his revolutionary strategy, and his program for everybody to learn from and act on. He brings alive, for example, how this new communism that he has forged ruptures decisively with the poisonous notion that the ends justify the means. And he insists, in contrast to that, that our revolutionary methods and our morality need to be thoroughly consistent with the ultimate goal of full emancipation. The humanity of this road and the humanity of BA shine through in these interviews. So you should watch them and you should spread them. And you should follow Bob Avakian, as I said, at Bob Avakian Official on all the social media platforms where he's delivering regular messages, breaking down truths that you need to know about this system, about this world, and about the revolution that is possible. All of this and more is drawn together in this pamphlet that lays out how we go to work to make this revolution possible, to get the thousands very soon into this revolution who are needed. Because when you have thousands working for revolution in a time like this, you can win millions to revolution in a very compressed way. And when you have millions who are won to revolution, you have a shot to actually make a revolution that can win. And so there you have it. Not just why we need this revolution, but why this revolution is possible and why it's more possible now than it has been in generations. Those are the two questions I said I would answer. So that brings me back to each of you here in this room tonight and my challenge to you. By this point in the evening, some of you are pretty clear that this revolution is not for you. But as the weeks pass and you think about what you heard tonight, keep in touch, stay connected, watch what develops and think about what you've heard. But I bet some of you are inspired by what you heard tonight. You really hope that this is possible. And you are drawn to the idea of making your life count in this way. But maybe you're the first in your family to be in college and your parents are really counting on you. Or maybe you're thinking, if I just get my degree, I can do some good for some people by becoming a doctor or a social worker or teacher or environmental scientist. Or maybe you're just wishing the revolution well and thinking some other people should get involved. I really hope they do, but me, I've got other plans right now. But here's the thing. If all that were possible is to do some good for some people, while this system hums in the background, crushing lives and destroying spirits on a massive scale, If all that was possible is to do some good for some people, that'd be the right thing to do. But when it is more possible than it has ever been in the whole history of human existence to make the kind of radical, sweeping, visionary change that can usher in a whole new epoch of human emancipation, and when the negative stakes of failing to take this chance are so huge, and when you've had the chance to learn about this, then this is the right thing to do. And while it is true that other people need to join this revolution, it is also true that every single one of them also currently has other plans. And it is also true that most of them don't even know about this revolution yet. Which brings me back to you. You're the ones in the room tonight. You're the ones who had the heart and the intellectual integrity to show up. Of course you need to learn more, and of course you have questions. But you know enough tonight to decide that you need to play a role as you learn in helping this revolution grow. Because the simple truth is that in a very real sense, whether this revolution spreads and takes hold now, whether all those other people who really should get into this revolution even have the chance to encounter it and join it, and whether enough of them do so that this rare chance for revolution is seized and a future carved out where humanity is finally able to walk this earth free, all of this depends in no small amount on what you decide to do. No, there are no guarantees that this revolution will win. But there is a chance, a real chance, a chance that is concretely increased as you step into this revolution. And it is guaranteed that if we don't make this revolution, that humanity really is thoroughly f***ed. So don't sleepwalk down the path that this system has carved out for you and for humanity. Step into this revolution. Make your life count. Stick around and get into this tonight. Thank you.
Once again, let me remind you that you are listening to The Michael Slate Show.
Let's see a show of hands. Okay, let's start with these two over here and you two. We'll take three at a time.
Thank you. Thank you for that introduction to the RevCom strategy. I was curious about whether what the role of rank and file workers would be in this revolution, if that's applicable, kind of mobilizing just workers from all sectors of American industry, is that factored into the playbook?
Okay, that's a good question.
How many communist countries have you or BA lived in, and for how long did you live there?
And the purpose of that would be, I have to say, I can say zero, but whether you...
So you don't know what you're talking about when you're talking about hey, this communism thing is great. You've never lived in a communist country.
Have you ever been at the bottom of the ocean, chained and drowning?
No, but
do you think you would like it? Do you need direct experience to know if something's a good idea or not? No,
I lived in Siberia for 2.5 years, Gulag Central.
I grew up in Venezuela during the Chavez and Maduro reign.
Right, right.
I know what that means.
It's horrible, right? Or did you like it?
The only reason the system itself fell was because of the greedy people that were behind it. The system itself is not the problem. So if you have something to say, listen, breathe.
I'm going to answer the first questions that were asked. And I'm going to just say, I do think what the sister said here, people came here, I think most people came here to hear a serious argument, serious engagement. So I'm going to treat it that way. And I did answer the methodological flaw that if you have to experience something directly to know if it's good or bad, it's really a... It's not a good argument. And I think the evidence that communism would be a better system is that at the base of any society, people have to come together and organize themselves to meet the requirements of life. Under capitalism, it's done through global networks of exploitation, supply chains that enslave millions of children in the Congo. Hold on! Millions of children in the Congo to make the coltan and the cell phones, the lithium and the rechargeable renewable Teslas and all of this and batteries. This is a system that all of our needs are met through global networks of exploitation. The food we eat is picked by migrants driven from their homelands because of the plunder that imperialism has done to most of their countries. This is not the way we have to live. The evidence that you shattered the monopoly of ownership of the massive means of production, this will get somewhat to your question too, the capitalists own these massive means of production. They're produced by millions throughout the world to create everything we need to live. But then at the end of the day, it's owned not by the people who made it, but by the capitalist class, those who own the machinery, the factories, the land, the communications, the finance structures, all of this. They extract the profit, and they are in cutthroat competition with each other to beat out their competition or be driven under, so they have to exploit ever more ruthlessly. They have to drive their prices down. They have to use the environment like an externality to profit and plunder, because if they start to care for it, it cuts into their bottom line and they get driven out. It's built into the system. Cannot be reformed. But with a revolution, you break the hold of that monopoly of ownership over the massive means of production. You still have people working collectively around the world, but it's for not for profit and competition of a few, but so that people can, in a planned way, that's what's in this Constitution, decide what are the social needs of society? What should we produce to meet people's needs? What kind of medical care? What kind of housing structures? What kind of agricultural needs? What kind of scientific research and medicine? You decide that consciously, collectively, not by the bottom line and competition, but by the social needs of society. And you take that social productive capacity and you do it. You put it to meeting people's needs, including all their physical needs of life, food, clothing, shelter, but also, and this is a big part of the new communism, it's also their intellectual and cultural lives. The fact that people will be brought into education, to science, to thinking and working with their minds and ideas as well as their backs and their bodies. So this is a world that's possible if you break, and it's based on the evidence of how things are today and how if you change certain things about them, you could use those same material resources, including human beings, to meet people's needs in a different way. That's the evidence of it. You don't have to have lived it to know that there's evidence for it. So that's one part of my answer. This sister who asked the first question asked, what's the role of workers in this? And I would put it this way. One of the things, look, everybody has a role to play in this revolution. Everybody who hates this system and its crimes and injustice has a role to play. And whether you come from a background of privilege, whether you come from the bottom of society, whether you come from what is a shrinking industrial workforce in this country, wherever you come from, there's a place and a role for you in this revolution. Now, we are not, you know, in Marx's time, he made an analysis that the industrial workers were going to be the backbone force of a revolution. And that made sense at that time. The world has changed radically since then, including that there has been the development of imperialism in the world, where whole nations are basically floating above, you know, sitting on top of the whole global economic supply chain and food chain. And the U.S. is one of these. And so you have a situation where everybody in this country, even those who are very oppressed, is living off the spoils to a degree of the people of the world. And this is especially true among many, many sections of the paid workforce, the industrial workforce, different, you know, people who were more traditionally described by Marx as the proletariat and the force for revolution. So the idea that they're going to be the most decisive force in revolution, the most decisive backbone force in it, is just doesn't correspond in the world today. I mean, there are struggles that are just for unionization. There are struggles that are just for higher wages. And these are fights against things that are oppressive in their lives. But the communist revolution is not for better conditions of labor under this system. And it's also, who are the most politically dynamic social forces who want to make a revolution or could most readily be won to it. So again, I'm not writing anybody off, but in this society, I think the way it's developed, the analysis that the RevComs have is much more rooted on those who are really catching hell in the inner cities and the most oppressed communities, people who are terrorized by police and national and racial oppression, and people who are outraged against that, even beyond those. If you think about in 2020, there was obviously black people who stood up against the police murder of George Floyd, but it was like huge sections of society, a lot of white people and others. This social contradiction of the oppression of black people is one of the main driving forces for revolution. Another one is the oppression of women, which affects people all through different strata of society. But the degradation, the dehumanization, the revanchist reassertion of patriarchy, including through the taking away of the right to abortion, which is enslavement. It is forced motherhood is female enslavement. This being hammered down on women, and just because it's not in California doesn't mean it's not happening, and it doesn't mean it's not coming here if we don't fight it and make a revolution. But this is also, you know, we have a slogan, break the chains, unleash the fury of women as a mighty force for revolution. This is another social force for revolution, as are the trans youth and the people who are furious around the assault on LGBTQ rights. There's the youth who walked out for the climate, the scientists who are struggling around this. There are social fault lines in this system. And we call them, we've identified five of them, the five stops. One is national oppression, racism, white supremacy, police terror. One is the demonization and deportation of immigrants. One is the oppression based on gender and sexual orientation. One is the wars for empire and the crimes against humanity. You think about the beautiful, courageous uprisings against the genocide in Gaza, which need to get stronger. But this is a fault line, too. And then the struggle around the environment is the fifth. So we more identify it around these social fault lines that cannot be resolved under capitalism more than the traditional proletariat workforce. But obviously, I hope that I've made clear that everybody has a role to play, and there will be people from among the industrial workforce, the different sections of society like that. It's just not where the main engine of a revolution in an imperialist country is going to come from.
And that brings us to the end of another show here at the Michael Slate Show. I'd like to thank Andy Z and everybody at the Revolution Nothing Less Show, my assistant producer, Henry Carson, and all of you for tuning in. And again, check out the RevComs on YouTube at youtube.com/TheRevComs and follow at Bob Avakian Official on all your social media platforms. And remember, the problem is not human nature, it is the nature of the system. Through a real revolution, a better world is possible. My name is Sansara Taylor. I'll talk to you again next week.
Trying to look past this thing that's between us, wondering when all this anger will fade. The stars look the same from where we are standing. Why can't we fix this mess we've made? Let's not forget that our fates are as one, just because we feel numb and betrayed. There is love, there must be something good, something strong between